Welcome to the Spinfoil Theory Podcast with your host, Taylor B. and Little Bagels.
Hello!
Yes, hello. And with our three-peat guest, the Wicked Jester.
There's silent H.
I don't understand what you mean. I'm saying it exactly how it's written, like Wicked.
Wicked
Jester.
Wicked Hester.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't think it's a soft J, the Bagels. I'm pretty sure that's like in jogging.
Jogging. The Wicked Yeaster.
The Wicked Yester.
Good to be here, our fine goes.
Thank you for joining us the third time. As you guys may know from our previous regular episodes, hope you enjoyed the very special episode last time. But for those of you who might have skipped it to go in chronological order, there is an apology going out for our last recording. 100% my fault. I had some levels basically all fakakta, and so because we had only done the master, that story ends with either I'm too loud or they're too quiet. And so sorry about that. Appreciate all you guys who plugged through. We've taken steps to correct and prevent extra backup steps that you might not be aware of. There's so many steps that we've taken. So where it doesn't happen again. So, thanks for bearing with us for that one recording. We're going to try to do better in the future. For those of you who are listening for the first time, we're an advanced theory podcast, advanced session, and that just means that we're going to be kind of talking about stuff like we just on the assumption that you kind of already have like a bare bones knowledge of what we're talking about, at least in reference to characters and, places, things like that. But we're not exclusive. We're here for you. If we say something and you're like, Taylor B., what the fuck? Or maybe the Bagels confused you. Wicked has done nothing wrong. Ever.
Although I make it a point to try and confuse people as often as possible.
It's true. That was actually part of his resume for guest, and it's why he made it on the show. Because we're like, he's gonna confuse so many goddamn people. If you're ever confused about something, you'd like to know more, and you're not sure where to look, or you just like a little short explanation, feel free to reach out to us, spinfoiltheory@gmail.com, @spinfoiltheory on Twitter. You can reach out to me personally on Twitter. Taylor B. can be found at thisisredleader, spelled LITRE, all one word. The Bagels, if you can hunt him down in LFG, or perhaps, if like, you're all alone, no one else can help, and if you can find him, maybe you can ask the Bagels?
You just need to say my name 3 times into the mirror, and I appear.
Okay, the lights need to be off. That's...
As do your pants.
Well, I mean... otherwise, there's no offering for the Bagels. wait, no, that's not true, guys. That's not... Don't quote me on that. I haven't even ended my sentence, so you could quote a full sentence. They're gonna, like, this is just one run-on, like, why would he say such a run-on sentence thing? Because of this point, I really need to just say, Taylor B. did not tell you your pants needed to be off. I'm not going to say it hurts your chances, though. I'm just saying, if you want some strong, independent Bagelses to show up, maybe it's a pants-off dance-off. Anyway.
Oh, my God.
Anyway.
And that's the show, folks.
All right, yeah. See you next week. That was our spin foil. That's all right. You guys feel good about that? All right, yeah.
We are off to a wonderful start.
Like, yeah, it's gonna be
right now.
It's gonna be a great to complete the Wicked Jester trilogy. Because the last time the Empire struck back and we could barely hear him.
Yeah.
But this time, he's wearing black, but somehow he's not, like, the Sith. He, like, really owns that pleather outfit he's got on. And you guys can't see this because it's just sound, but he's got it on. Like, we can see it in our mind's eye.
Nothing beats chaps.
So, all right. Sidebar. Aren't all chaps assless? Like, I feel like that's a redundant name. Like, if you got chaps on, without pants.
I would assume
your ass is hanging out.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that most chaps are assless.
I mean, sure at this point, but even historically, I would argue that they never had an ass.
If they had asses, would they be crotchless pants?
Well, they have, like...
People were ahead of their time in the kink revolution and had no idea.
I'm just saying, like, there is some dude out there looking down from heaven and is just like, see, my thing's still popular. And then there's some other prude, like, just being like, yeah, but, like, they're not really using it as intended, are they? And he's just a happy creator, and he's just like, you know what, let them do their thing.
Hey, what if that was the way they intended? And it just so happened that people...
It also blocked mud.
it just so happened that people were just like, you know, I ain't using that for that, but that would keep my legs from getting chafed on the horse.
I don't know about all that in and out of my asshole. And before you guys say anything about me, that I was quoting a lady, voice and all. So, guys, we do a podcast about Destiny, the game, and its lore. So,
not assless chaps.
I mean, consider that like a bonus that you all got in your pod playlist. Thank you for listening to us. Please don't leave us here. This week's episode is one that's kind of near and dear to my heart, and perhaps like a little more like topical now that we've entered the season of Arrivals. Which, all right, so maybe I'm the only one, just to like end this, since we also brought up assless chaps. Every time I think of season of Arrivals, I think of this. It's not my joke, and I can't remember the guy's name, but it's a stand-up comedian's joke, and he's saying that basically the British version of "I'm coming" is "I'm arriving."
Mm-hmm.
I'm arriving, like it's like some Downton Abbey, like that's how they would say it.
The season of climax.
That's what I'm saying. Does that mean the rest of the seasons are all a falling action?
Oh god, the deflationary action.
There's a season of the lazy in bed with a towel.
Oh my god.
There's the season of the "I just got back from work."
Yep. That's right. All right.
I've got a headache.
I mean,
for anyone who's
looking me jobs too.
There you go. The Bagels fantasizes about a beast with 10 million arms. Like, confirmed. So guys, those of you who are still with us, this week's episode is one that's near and dear to my heart. It's about nightmares, and it's about the idea that because of the nature of the nightmares and what we know about them through Shadowkeep and the story missions, our interactions with Eris, and as she processes the deaths of all the members of her fire team, are the nightmares... Does the person that they're haunting you with have to be dead? So the idea is questioning, and perhaps we can say the theory is that maybe they don't have to be dead, but the idea is that because they're really in your head to generate that image, to generate that contact, technically, if you believed the individual or thing that they're presenting to you is dead, it would have the same effect, because for all you know, it doesn't matter. So the sort of crux on it and questioning nature of the theory is, do these nightmares have to be dead people? Because we know that they are not the people that they are in the form of. We know that from Eris.
Mm-hmm.
We know that it is not unique to Guardians, because Mithrax's nightmares are also found, or at least one, is also found on the moon. Mithrax is not Arisen. We have confirmed this in a previous episode. So, what's, if it's just to get at you, to get in your head, are these nightmares ghosts? And not in the Destiny sense of ghost, in the ghost sense. Or are they just sort of mind games from a Dorito ship? I'm gonna start with the bagels this week. Bagels, tell me what you think, bagels.
Okay. So pretty much all of the nightmares that we encounter are dead. And that includes Crota, Zydron, Gaul, Skolas, you name it.
Tanix asterisks. Tanix hard asterisks.
I'll get to Tanix in a little bit.
He would still be dead, but maybe it's not the same. I don't know. Hard asterisks. Please reference a previous episode because I am still not in the camp. Not drinking that Kool-Aid yet.
Well, even if Tanix is, like, the original format of Tanix is dead, and we've got Dread Pirate Tanix floating out there about, we still have the original format of Tanix haunting us in the nightmare format. So what we have are a bunch of enemies that we've previously encountered that are dead, and then a handful, particularly in the format of the Fanatic and Toland, who have died, but are not apparently dead.
Yeah, in the case of the Frenetic, which is what I like to call him because I like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but in the case of the Fanatic, I always wonder if... Does this... Depending on what we decide tonight, I would postulate a further question. Does that mean if we do reach a conclusion, or if you do believe that they do have to be dead, does that mean what's being resurrected in terms of the Scorn is more like a zombie?
I do believe like, the Scorn like, are essentially zombies.
I would go with that too.
Yeah, to reference Blue on Focus Fire chat, like they're all flesh and no anima.
Yeah, they have no will of their
would
own.
Say something like that.
Outside of, yeah, right.
He would.
That dude's always thinking about that flesh.
I tell you what, if there's a guy who likes his
oh my god,
his Greek explanation.
Uh-huh. I thought you were gonna say if there's a guy who likes his flesh. I'm just like
I mean he was the first one I ever heard because I'm not from Texas. So those things he was talking about from the donut shop that sounds like pigs in a blanket, like the way he described them the first time, I was like, so it's like a meat donut? And that's when I knew. That's when I knew. Love you, Blue. Big shout out. You're a man of taste, culture, and the flesh. Just losing all of our fans and... in any partner shows, like at like 2 days after this is released, like so yeah, we got kicked out of the Lore Network, you guys. We're kind of we've been issued a cease and desist in references to certain.
Oh my god! Wicked's currently being held on charges.
That's what I'm saying. Is it Wicked?
Quicken is pending a court date.
Oh man, I have opted to not show up in advocacy as to help his chances.
That's probably for the best.
I'm sorry, the bagels. I'm sorry, you're saying?
But regardless, we've got the Fanatic, who is clearly still alive in some form. Now, if you want to argue that he is dead in so much as that he's been killed, and he's basically just... He's not mindless, because you know that when you go and fight him again in the strike over and over again, that he's basically resurrecting again and again. And so it's a little bit up in the air on exactly what Fickrell is. The rest of the Scorn seem to be mindless. for the most part. But the fanatic himself, he seems to have at least some semblance of his former consciousness as a Fallen, even if it's just warped beyond recognition of what we typically know. So I would argue that the fanatic is still alive, even if it's just in some sort of form that I would never want to be subjected to.
It kind of has this sort of feel for me of like, and I mean, this is totally tongue-in-cheek, me being a player of the game, so like, I don't mean this as a lore excuse, but it's like the fact that he says the same thing every time you go through the strike, but it's canon that it's actually like him each time, you're not repeating the strike.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes me think like he like forgot what he said before because you murdered him.
And so
he just comes back up. He like comes back up, and he's just like ready to tell you off, like, "Ooh, dead thing." He's like, "There's gonna be such a sweet burn," and then he doesn't realize like we've heard it 30 times already. Where it's like, "Yeah,
somebody hit the record. It stuck."
Yeah, like, okay, buddy, like you can have your little joke, and then by like the third time, you're just kind of like, "Man, he didn't even know." He doesn't even know that we murdered him after he said this stupid thing. I'm not even mad anymore.
Dude, this is my 15th time in a row trying to get a mind benders from you. I've heard the speech. Just give it a rest.
So I have a question for you two regarding him in particular. So him and Nokris both, really, if you think about it, have the exact same power.
Well, I would only offer, I don't think we killed Nokris in that strike. I think we just defeated him.
Correct. In that same regard, I don't think we killed the fanatic either. Because if you think about it, like, the whole thing about the Fallen is that their ether is infused with, it's dark ether.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's been infused with the darkness. So clearly, the fanatic has some kind of control, or at the very least, is aware of some additional secrets about the darkness that has allowed him to manipulate and reanimate the dead. And the same kind of ability is displayed by the fanatic, and his ability to reach out into the dark ether. So the fanatic and Nokris are both displaying the same capability of using the darkness and the secrets that they've learned to manipulate the dead back into life.
So I want to put this out here, kind of building upon what you said.
Uh-huh.
Based on how I think we all tend to treat the subjects, if we can put them at least as two sides of the same coin in this place, the light and the darkness are not conscious forces. They are tools to mm-hmm. tap into.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah.
I absolutely agree, especially if you play the magic.
Oh. Oh, well,
I'm sorry, what?
Well, I played it. but alright, so how do you worship something that is intangible? How do you worship something that is a force of nature?
I could say something really horrible right now, but I'm not going.
Well, alright, so like, just to put this out there, like, there are plenty of literal religions that I don't mean uh-huh. to, like, sound like I'm mistakenly talking shit about. Like, I don't mean in, like, the Shinto way that they worship nature or, like, the spirits of their ancestors you know, not just Shinto, but, like, as, like, a very raw example. I don't mean to sound like an expert, anyone listening. But, like, just the idea that there literally is, like, nature worship. There's, like, forces worship. I feel like in many of those things, there's, like, a spirit or a god or a conduit who is the, at least, like, representation or manifestation of that force.
Uh-huh.
And when we have those, but we've also, like, recently sort of determined that even within their own ranks, there's articles of doubt about whether or not there are gods. On both sides.
So, here's what I would propose in regards to that. We know that on both sides, there is at least recognition or tales of the Gardener and the Winwer.
Mm-hmm.
And these have been kind of the accepted, I guess, demigods not really gods necessarily, because they arrived with the universe. They're not really the creators of it. They're just a part of it. They existed because they had to in order for everything to exist.
I always, just to add to that, like two sentences, I always thought, or air quotes, two sentences, it always made me really interesting, the gardener and the winterer. It makes me wonder if they're not even necessarily any arbiter of any force, they're just the earliest manifestation of someone who can control it. I just wanted to add that.
They might not even be conscious forms. It might just be like how I currently imagine that whole lore book is that it's a representation of the darkness and the light that we can understand.
Right.
We have a hard time imagining the cosmic forces of the light and the dark without some level of personification.
I mean, that book is 100% written in metaphor. I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you, Wicked. What's up?
Oh, no, you're good. I think the easiest way that, for me personally, I found to look at the Gardner, or that the book unveiling, was essentially looking at it as though I were being taught this lesson by the personification of Darwinism. Like, if the concept of Darwinism could speak to me, this is what it would say.
Sure, sure.
And that's pretty much how I see both the Gardener and Winnower, is that you've got these two concepts, these two overarching aspects of reality, where you've got creationism and Darwinism, where it's just the creationism portion of it isn't necessarily a... and not speaking creationalism as in, like, religious side... creationalism is just as a everything deserves to live, everything deserves to be born, and have chances and everything like that. But going back to what your point was, as far as the individual, them not being necessarily avatars of either, I would absolutely say that they are avatars of forces, but that the forces they are avatars of aren't the light and the dark. I think the light and the dark are very much aspects within reality that they both use. And I think that was something that both me and Green from FFC have both talked about before, is that, you know, there's the gardener has used darkness before. And that's when you see that in the unveiling book when she kills the flower. It's something that she didn't mean to do, but it happened. That's an aspect of where it was the winnower's job, it was the winnower's tool to do such a thing. That Gardner never did that.
I was just gonna add to this, like, based on that description, my mind immediately goes to Trading Places, and the two rich assholes betting each other a dollar and playing with actual
people. I can do your job better than you can.
No, but you know what I'm saying? Like, they play with actual people's lives. And that's why also you see him again at the end of Coming to America. So those two movies exist in the same film universe, fans. I don't know if you guys knew that about 80s movies featuring SNL cast members. Anyway. You learned today. People probably born in this current millennium. Anyway, we love you all. Please don't feel alienated. But my only point, is that I always wonder if it's two beings of equal power, of equal stature, who don't necessarily exist as one form or the other, but are able to wield both, but they have favorites. And so they make a bet with each other.
Sure.
Like, mm-hmm. I can use just this and beat you in this game. And the other one's like, fuck no, you can't. Let's fucking put up a shot.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
And thus our universe.
Let's do it, bitch. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, right? Which honestly, as bad as that might sound, guys, there's an argument to me that's better than being created with no purpose or just being created because accident.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at least there's a defined point to our existence, which many people may find comforting, even though they're disappointed in what that is.
Yeah. You are meant to be a rook.
That's what I'm saying. Like, well, like, it sucks because rooks only move these two ways, but at least I know what my thing is now. I am rook.
Well, make it to the other side of the board and I might make you a queen.
Only if you're a pawn.
Only if you're a pawn.
That's why Guardians are so great, is we made it to the other side of the board. And then we got rezzed.
Oh, wait. If you use that analogy, though, say that we were pawns that made it all the way to the other side of the board.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're like the lowest level of the useful pieces on a chessboard.
Right, but
we
then,
were. And our ghost, and our ghost chose to us to revive.
Yeah. Yeah, then we got promoted to queens. We're all queens, you guys. Guardians are strong, powerful, fierce queens.
I love it.
Yeah, I you can quote me on that. If and when anyone ever makes a meme or suggests that we do a T-shirt, that'll be at least number one on the list. Yeah, I'm not saying it'll get selected necessarily. But I'm here for it. I'm here for it. It always makes me wonder though. They decide to play this game out of one another, and like in a way, I'm kind of offended that there's no stakes for them. They're just doing it to like argue. I don't know if anyone else like feels that way, but like when you realize these two, at least compared to us, supreme beings, paracausal like super beings. Are just like, nah, like, this is right. And the other one's like, no, that's right. Like, all right, let's play a game. And that game is, like, the universe. I just have a very strong go fuck yourself to that type of shit.
Well, yeah, because they're way more powerful than you, and you're helpless to stop them. Anybody in that kind of position where you're just not able to do anything about it, and your entire existence is completely within their control, of course you're going to be resentful.
Imagine the scenario, though, where you couldn't imagine being the pawn, and you were yourself playing the game. Like, what do you... When you're playing chess, and you sacrifice a pawn to take a rook, for example, do you feel sorry for the pawn?
Do you consider your feelings?
Yeah, you do not. Feel the use of it.
I don't the bagels, but as we all know, like, I canonically just hate wood. So as I've only encountered
so many different ways.
Yeah, I've only encountered wood-based chess sets, so like I'm always enthused whenever a pawn is sacrificed because fuck you, wood.
He just takes and dumps it in the fire.
That's what I'm saying. I don't hate trees, everyone. I don't hate trees. Living trees, fine. It's once they're wood that I'm like pissed.
What do you mean once they're wood?
Wood is chopped. Wood is chopped. A tree is a tree.
But a tree is
it's living wood.
Yeah, but I'm made of bones, but you wouldn't say bones are alive.
You're made of more than bones.
Well, they're made of more than wood.
No, they're really not.
They have leaves, they have nuts, which is something I also identify with.
Oh my god.
And they feel things. Documented plants feel things. Don't at me at this. Check out the Smithsonian.
Okay, how about this? Would you say that you're made of water?
Not as much as I would say trees are made of wood.
Okay, so clearly you can see that trees are made of wood.
Yeah, but they're not wood. Like, you're not what you're made of. The tree is its own living thing, and I'm not here to hate on trees for existing.
Yes, because that would be naughty.
Yeah, like, ain't no tree ever gave me a splinter. All I'm saying is no tree ever gave me a splinter. But goddamned if some wood
did. Did you climb trees as a kid?
Yeah, like, we have thick bark trees around here. Like, I never got splinters from that. I got splinters from plenty of fucking unfinished decks and, like, wooden things that people are like, no, this is sweet because it's old and I stressed it, and I'm just like, splinters everywhere.
You didn't stress the deck, you're stressing me out.
Yeah, like, This is not vintage. Like, the reason this looks vintage to you is because you associate it with being old, and that's because no one looked after the ship. Welcome
vintage
to my TED Talk.
Is just a word we came up with to make older people feel better about another birthday.
Oh, man. I want everyone to be very excited with how old I am as I grow older. And I hope, which, once again, happy birthday from the Spoonful of Theory podcast. Wicked. Which once again, which I'm going to restate this on this better volume thing. So last episode, if you couldn't listen to the episode because of the volume levels, was Wicked's birthday, and he was like, this part of my birthday, I want to be on the Spinful of Theory podcast. And we started a thing to where we were encouraging everyone who had heard that, or now this message, to like at him on all of his socials and say happy birthday from the Spinful of Theory podcast. And just to give that joke a little more legs, we mean this in the best way. If you see someone else already added him with that, don't worry, you didn't miss your chance. Reply and say the same goddamn thing. And just as make it a tree of well wishes, no matter what the day, for his birthday. And the reason I'm saying this is, like, whenever you listen to this podcast, anyone in the future, anyone, like, maybe re-listening because something tragic happened to me or the bagels, and you want to relive the good old days, like, I want you to find Wicked Jester, because my prediction is he'll be just fine. He's a sweet dude and a family man. My prediction is based on the fact that I want you in the future, even if this show is dead, burned, and in the ground, to, like, just at him wherever he's at and be like, happy birthday. Because even if he's 92 and, like, so senile he thinks it actually is his birthday, you're going to put a smile on his face.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to make a happy little boy.
And everybody else who has heard this book, if they see it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, you're gonna spread some joy, but I just wanted to be like a running joke that just randomly, like, if you're bored and you don't know what to do, wish this man a happy fucking birthday from the Spinful of Theory podcast, which you are now a part of by having done that. You're welcome. Welcome to the show.
Oh, God.
You're part of the greater Spinful Theory podcast network. And we welcome you to our ranks. We need to expand the Discord a little bit, Bagels. We should let anyone who wants to come wax on lore. Come wax on lore with us.
I agree.
All right, that's now in the works, too. You're welcome, Earth. And space, if you guys are getting this too somehow.
I don't know if the universe is ready for this, though.
I mean, I'm going to put this out there. Like, I say space in a very broad way because I don't know where you're at me from. If this is 10,000 years in the future and you're listening to this and you're like, you know what, I'm going to wish this asshole a happy I will have you know, we've robotically planned to preserve Wicked Jester.
Wait, what? That was not a part of this decision.
We've planned to do it. Raz will be there too. She can be your ghost.
Mention after the fact. I'm sure she'll
yeah.
move.
Yeah, she can.
Raz,
she can be your
Raz
ghost.
Sold me out.
Yeah. No. They'll all tell Miss Raz we love her. Anyway. That is a very much like on volume version of the joke for anyone who missed out on it last time. Wish this dude a happy fucking birthday on behalf of the Spinful Theory podcast and yourself, because you know what? He's earned it. All right, now that I've derailed the show to rehash a joke from last week because of volume issues. You know, as every good host does.
Right. Yeah,
yeah, Bagels yeah. agrees. My co-host yeah. agrees.
Yes.
I kind of want to pitch it more directly to, like, on topic question to our special guest, Wicked Jester. What are your thoughts on the legs? I know you've had, like, some things that have come up based on what we've said, but, like, what's your reaction?
So my initial reaction on the nightmares in particular would have to say I don't think that they have to be dead. Nor really do I think that they have to have died. Or at the very least, having to have died in order to be a traumatic experience that we see as a nightmare. The reason why I say this is because we see nightmares all over the place that don't even, that really, that we have no idea. We've never seen them before.
And like that had nothing to do with us?
That had nothing to do with us, nor gotcha. More than likely anybody currently alive. So I don't think it necessarily has to do with being involved with a death so much as involved with an extremely tragic event. Now, the most often ones that you're going to run into, of course, are going to be deaths. Those are very easy to become tragic and relate to that. But I think that one of the things that we've run into, specifically with like with the moon, is that you've got all those individuals that are up there from like the K1 kind of looking at the explorers.
Twilight Gap.
Twilight Gap. You've got the people from not even Twilight Gap, but what's the name of the moon battle that happened prior to?
Oh, Twilight Gap's on Earth, isn't it?
Yeah. Burning Lake. Sorry.
Not Burning Lake.
The one that Crota came and romper stomped everybody.
The Great Disaster. The Great Disaster.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, so, listeners. I always confuse the two, and sorry to derail your explanation.
So, the Great Disaster happened. That's where we've got a lot of people who could have died in that. But I think there's a point where you really have to think about when these people died, because some of them are quoted as saying, you know, there's fallen here. And from my knowledge, we didn't have fallen really partaking that much in the Great Disaster. Everything was mostly hive related, and the fallen just kind of showed up there as scavengers.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, since really in D1, the fallen were our first real exposure there, if they showed up on the moon well after the fact of the Great Disaster. Just to try and get away from everybody who was on Earth trying to kill him.
That makes sense. But,
so, I guess what I'm saying is it's hard to tell when the ghosts died, if they did die. But everything that they do have in common is that they feel they're traumatized. They're ultimately traumatized. So, I don't know. I think there's a little bit of plausible deniability that they would have to be dead. And then, of course, you've got Toland, who... Me personally, I still don't necessarily think it qualifies as a death. How he was killed.
Essentially transcended death is kind of what it seems like.
Yeah, kind of ripped out of the mortal realms.
I always wonder, so like the hive explanation is that they don't escape their death, they hide it. And I'm sure it's Savathun who came up with this for them. But the whole idea of the throne
It
role,
was not.
Well, nope. Who was it?
It was actually Oryx's daughters, the worm that he cut in half. They came up with the idea of the Oversoul. Savathun was actually watching her, and they were I think they were either under the guy or under the instruction of Savathun, or were being inspired by her for it.
So the Oversoul, I thought, was like a new third part to the idea of hiding your death. Because the Oversoul is something you have to destroy separately from the resurrection. So, like, they've tried to resurrect Crota even after we destroyed his Oversoul.
Mm-hmm. Well, no.
They have.
When did they try to resurrect Crota after we destroyed his Oversoul?
I want to say the most recent time that we went back to that friggin' map. I don't remember.
There was the burial ceremony.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I don't remember them actually trying to bring him back. Now, but they do say that there's multiple ways to bring a hive god back from the
right.
Death.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking the Oversoul is like a super good way to do it.
Yeah, that's probably one of the easiest.
Right. So I guess what I'm thinking here is like the Oversoul to me sounds like a backup of your consciousness or whatever, like
mm-hmm.
for however you want to slice it. Maybe if you're a fan of Altered Carbon, maybe that's like a little more thing. And like that's how I interpreted the Oversoul. I didn't think the Oversoul was predicated on being able to hide your death or resurrect a hive, though. And if we want to go to that, I'm down for it. But I do want to get this out just before I get I get sidetracked. And forget what I'm talking about. So I figure Savathun is the reason that the hive know how to hide their death. So I just wonder if any, like, if that's really immortality. That sounds like a, it sounds like a metaphor for how Nokris encountered Savathun in the recent Weblore, right? Mm-hmm. When he came to, it was just like this gaping, like this thrall with his mouth gaping, like sitting there twitching. It wasn't really her.
Right. So
that's she how I always a, like.
She created a basically a fictional version of herself by using one of her thrall.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, like I guess in this case it comes out a little more like the thrall is the conduit for her illusion, for her lie.
Mm-hmm.
More or less, yep.
And what I think about when I think of like a not true death, like hiding your death in your throne world the way the hive do it, is a little more like what you killed was my avatar. What you killed was my like flesh suit that I wear in your realm. I've actually been back here
the
whole time.
Here's the interesting part. So here's the interesting part. If you died right now,
I'd be dead.
And if you died right now and your soul were taken out and put into another body, would you consider yourself dead? Even though what you normally recognize as your body, would you consider yourself dead?
So when you say my soul, it's like for all intents and purposes, my consciousness?
Your consciousness, yes.
I'd have to admit that I died. But once I'm in a living body again, I would say I'm not.
So that's one of the things with the hive that and we see this in the, I'm forgetting the name of the book. It's the hive tome that we discovered where the siblings were basically trying to overthrow the regime of Savathun and or Crota's offspring, where they basically came up with a way to try and put basically one of the brother knight. They took his body, killed him, and then put their sister, who was a wizard, inside of him.
Inquisition of the Damned, right?
Yeah. No, that was that was weird.
And you essentially, they were talking about there was a resurrection process.
Like a Frankenhive.
Yeah. And one of the things that we've talked about with the hive themselves, as far as the sisters that orcs killed and then brought back to life, even though he said they were true deaths, he killed them, brought them back to life. And one of the things they talk about is basically resurrection or reincarnation.
I just wonder.
It's hinted at reincarnation, I should say.
So there's always this. Because even back in D1, with that first Book of Sorrows that we get, like at least in its entirety, I think there might be some references to it with the Thorn, to a different Book of Sorrows before then. So just to be fair, there's a sort of. How can I say this? Like, it never feels like it's a reincarnation. Like, I realize they're always written, not in metaphor, but there's like a gap in translation, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And sometimes metaphor has to be expected. So even if something that like sounds very flat as you read it, here is a guardian being presented to you is going to be lost upon you. No, because it's not like we have a member of the hive to translate it. Like we would have had to either it was presented to us in our language, in which we have to like kind of like question it in its entirety, especially with Savathun in the margins, or we translated it, which means we might not get the context of every phrase.
Yeah.
It always seems like it's closer to a resummoning than it is a resurrection. There's a ritual to bring back the soul from their throne world into our physical plane.
Yeah, it's that's where I'm kind of going with the whole like Avatar thing. Like maybe not like Avatar in like the sense of the movie. Or...
We don't talk about the movie.
I do not want to talk about the movie. Although the movie isn't the worst. Well, honestly, if the person going in the tub and waking up in the Avatar were on two different planes, that's not the worst analogy, but that was not what I was going for. I was thinking more of like in Spider-Man, the movies, Marvel Cinematic Universe, when Iron Man shows up in Far From Home.
Uh-huh.
And he's not really in the suit. He's just like doing it from his glasses while he's like at a party. That's how I imagine the Court of fucking Oryx worked, is like typically like he's sitting there with his glasses on, enjoying the court, and just off just like fucking slaughtering shit the whole time. No, I've got the glasses on. I'm doing both. I can do that. That's how I always interpreted it. Like to to hide your death means what you killed wasn't real. The way I read it, and I'm not saying you guys are wrong, but that's just how like I always took that concept.
So then, how would one, if you could hide your death, how would you explain Oryx's death then?
We went into his throne world and kill him. Same way with Crota. And it's explained. But
how do we know that was him though? Because
that's where he hid himself to protect himself from death.
Is it?
That's the way I always interpreted the lore, like from the dark.
I know that's what the story says. I'm more or less basically doing the whole if we can't justify and say that yes, it was him that we killed in the real world, how do we know that it was him that was in that area? How do we know that he didn't just send us somewhere other than his own throne world?
Well, just being that he is the... I know Savathun's thing is to make war. Or Zebu or Wrath, I'm sorry.
Zebu Wrath. Yep.
Yeah, I know that's her thing to make war, but him being the navigator also, to me, gives him this sort of air of the conqueror. Yeah, because like, if your thing is to make war, you don't want someone you can crush. You want someone who can actually put up a fight.
Yeah,
sure, that's fair.
Whereas like that's more advantageous because that's what feeds her worm. Just like secrets and lies feed Savathun, and navigating and exploring, and what I'm proposing, conquering. In my way, I feel is representative of Oryx. Yeah, that's sort of where I'm going for with with that. I feel like they all have their own ways of feeding their worm, that they all made like the same contract, or they made their contracts at the same time. And I would also submit that perhaps their broods follow that same lore, so I wouldn't be surprised if Savathun had a very small brood that was actually hers. No, just because like it's easier to keep secrets in a smaller group.
Yeah, I can see that.
True, and it makes sense logically that the secret monger would be the one that would just have a few elite like spies, essentially.
Yeah,
instead of having warriors.
The smallest network that was directly connected to you, and the fact that you can kind of circumvent the throne of the Taken gives you like this whole other army you never really have to interact with because you got Quaria as your like main
in between.
Your main gal.
Yep.
I always thought Quaria was a she. If it turns out that it's not, or if it's just like an it, like I don't mean to.
I always figured the elects were more the asexual or not really sexually assigned.
I feel like Corey is a she. I feel like that's established somewhere.
It's not. It's,
okay, that kind of those kind of stories are not the ones we're reading here today.
Bang it, the bagels. We told you about bringing up your lemons on this show. For all of you new to the internet, I just dated myself. I just dated myself real hard in the fanfiction community. You can look up what it means. I'm not here to teach you about that. I'm here to talk about Spinfoil. So... I like how you both are old enough to know what the fuck I'm talking about.
It's like, thanks, you weren't the only one you dated.
That's right. You can suck on that lemon.
Oh my god.
But yeah, that's sort of my thoughts on that. I feel like they just did kind of make it more circle, so I stopped talking over you guys, I think, which I'm doing. it's like they don't... What you kill is not them. That's like a facsimile.
Okay.
And that's why I think at least with Oryx and his hive, we've had to go into their throne world to actually kill them. And then when we kill the Oversoul, it's like we destroy the backup.
Okay, I can see that.
Yeah, that makes sense to me, too. That's kind of how I interpreted it. At least it's somewhere along that line of thought.
All right, any like other thoughts? Anyone got those?
I don't know how we got back
I was gonna say I steered us back real hard just so we could actually round it off if we had any further tangentials to frolic through, and I'm here for it, but I feel like for sake of saying we have a cohesive cohesive show structure, I had to at least round that off. Other stuff. Are there any other like things that are provocative in your minds, boys?
That are provocative? You don't want to ask me that question.
I do in context of the show. I do in context of the show.
Okay. So in regards to the nightmares, one of the things that did get brought up that we've talked about so far has been Toland and the others. One of the things that I was pointing out to my friends was that if you look, granted the energy that the nightmares have, if you look at the motes and stuff that we're banking in our current, I guess our current activity for the public event.
Yep.
Like all the red energy that's coming out, like all of these, the thing that I'm worried about and curious about is why don't we see things like the Cabal experiencing nightmares? Why haven't we seen them tormented by these things?
Because the ships, they aren't interested in the Cabal. They're interested in either us as player characters or us as guardians. I haven't quite made up my mind on that yet, but it's I'm pretty sure it's one or the other.
Yeah. Here's my logic behind not quite that, or I guess not even not quite to your point, but so if you look on if you look on the moon over by the Fallen Catch, there's two nightmares that are fallen that are assisting the other fallen in fighting the Vex. So as far as them not wanting to help with or not being interested necessarily in their power, I think it's interesting that they are helping other species and for some reason neglecting others or attacking others, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
So I don't know.
Do you think there might be interesting point. Do you think there might be some, I guess in sort of the same way where if for all you fans of Star Trek, on the holodeck, certain characters would have certain reactions even after Moriarty realizes he's a holodeck program.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, but like Futurama fans, like real holographic simulated evil Lincoln. They it's back. Sorry, I had to complete the meme.
Are you saying that the nightmares are generating some level of conscious thought?
It's more like a template that they're built off of. The nightmare is there to freak out whoever, right? Doesn't necessarily have to be us.
But the programming's so deep that it automatically, it believes it's a fallen.
Yeah. Because that's how it haunts you so effectively. Or maybe it's, how can I say this? It's a perfect representation of what you imagine that person to be. While it might not be a perfect representation of them. Because it's pulling it out of your mind, so, in my opinion, to affect you the most.
Yeah, it's our nightmare. Therefore, it's going to behave how we expect it to.
Right. And so even if you're not around, it's going to start doing what you would expect it to do.
Mm-hmm.
So the Fallen makes sense to me. Helps the other Fallen against the Vex.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Until you show up, and they all settle their differences even from beyond the grave to fight you.
So, also, here's another interesting point, that just since we're on the topic of nightmares and the darkness in general and stuff like that. We were talking about the energy that the Taken, or that the nightmares put off, the orange energy, it looks just like the motes and everything that we have to pick up.
Yep, yep, yep.
The Taken don't, whenever you kill the Taken don't drop that energy.
That's true. It only comes from the other non-Taken factions.
Mm-hmm. So it begs the question, if the Taken don't have darkness energy in them, which I'm assuming, or we have been assuming that's what we're banking, then if the are the Taken really the darkness? And if that is so, then are the nightmares really the dark?
I always thought mm-hmm. what Oryx did when he was taking mm-hmm. someone was creating a husk of that person. Basically, like, he saps them of all their shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then to fuck with everyone else, it's almost like a weak-ass version of a nightmare, you might say.
You think so?
Yeah, because, like, it's...
It's supposed to be a weaker version of a
Well,
nightmare?
Without him around, they start doing what they would do if they were alive. Because you remember, before Coria started moving in, those Taken started to make moves on their own.
True.
Back to their, like, original aspirations. I think this was, like, actually best demonstrated with a Cabal Taken, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. And so, like, to me... That definitely offers the idea that, like, just like we were just saying with the nightmare,
mm-hmm.
it's doing, I think, in maybe in perhaps a deeper way if they're taken, because he actually, like, consumes the being to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways it might be a better facsimile of what that person was, though they are now dead. But it's completely under the will of whoever the royalty of the Taken are at that time, in my opinion. But that's really interesting you bring that up, because it makes me think, if what we're encountering now, that the Doritos / like Andross forces looking ships, mm-hmm. when you do that thing, look up, if you ever played the original Star Fox, oh my god, and in the best way, like, heart you punchy, if that's what was inspiring you too, but like, yeah, it just reminds me of those early, like, polygon, like, all right, it's like a rhombus, and we put a stinger on it, like, do a barrel roll.
And bad guy.
Yeah. Like, this is the best we can do. and I totally love you for it, but, excuse me, sorry. If they're showing up, now, if they're, like, a higher level of the darkness
mm-hmm.
than anything we've encountered so far, including Oryx, and what he's doing is sort of, like, a weaker version, or maybe a copy of a copy, or, like, a different attempt at the same end as what they're doing with the nightmares,
Which would be kind of funny because that would be just like what I was talking about with the Fanatic and Nokris, where it's just it's the same kind of technique or same kind of means to an end or same kind of end, just a different means being used.
Mm-hmm.
I will say in the place of Nokris, what just because I've always viewed the Hive as a pyramid scheme.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
it's basically pretty much
accuracy.
Yep.
Yeah, I've always viewed them as a pyramid scheme. I always viewed what Nokris did as like direct marketing. Because think about it this way, right? There's only one worm in that equation, Zol.
Mm-hmm.
And he raises the dead, and then their subsequent deaths
feed the
only worm in the equation.
Actually, are you sure about that? Because wouldn't Nokris have had a worm going to Zol?
Well, I mean, like, Zol being the worm god, sorry. There's only one worm in that equation leading to Zol.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, like, sorry about that. Yeah, but I just mean, like, there's only one worm in this, and it's, like, fucking wholesale.
Wholesale worm. Get your worm, dude.
Here. This is what I'm saying. Like he took a different economic approach of of the fucking Hive. And they kick them out for it. They're like, you're not going to do the pyramid scheme. Not even multi-level marketing. Get out of here. Like, tear down all his statues. No son of mine. So that's kind of how I always viewed the difference between what Nokris was doing and what was happening. With like Oryx and the rest of his brood. Now, very interesting though, with the new web lore, I feel like he's in like sort of like a transient place because now he has access to, as I read that lore, he has access to a throne world again.
Mm.
But he kept the secrets of necromancy.
I mean, I would assume yes, because he was going to try. He said that he lacked the power to do it, not necessarily the knowledge on how.
Right.
So I assume as long as he is able to gain the power back, he's able to, or the requisite strength, I would say yes.
The way I'm figuring it is now that he has access to, because I figure that space he was actually entreated to the what I'm going to call like the projection, the facsimile, that thrall with its mouth agape. As a conduit, I'm assuming that space is now Nokris's throne world, because it's not her throne world. And if anything, she like probably has more power over it than him. If she had to create it just for him to go there, or maybe it's just like that's not how the space works. She can just direct him anywhere. But like I'm assuming that's where his throne world begins now.
Not entirely convinced that it's a throne world. It very well might be. It's definitely the Ascendant Plane. That much is established.
What else do Hive do in the Ascendant Plane? Or
quite frankly,
Ascendant Hive. Like,
yeah. No, I get what you're putting down. I'm just not 100% convinced. It could be that he's out there just basically extending Savathun's reach.
Oh no, she's above him now. She's his new god, right? But
now
it's like a combination of the two as I see it. I feel like we're going to fight in-game Nokris multiple times now because he has a place to hide his death. And then, like, it'll be some weird, like, probably that's how they'll bring in, like, wave, just like, stomp mechanics for whatever game mode is just because... No, because, like, you can kill all his Hive and then he can raise them up and send more at you.
Uh-huh.
And it's just this, like, I mean, unless you had, like, a huge kill event or can, like, close however he's getting them in there, like, that sounds like a pretty great way to distract us as he's been instructed.
Mm-hmm.
And shit, what if he can raise, like, other Hive or, like, other things that don't even, like, have to do with him?
What if he can raise Ahamkara?
Oh, Jesus.
I don't think. If he could raise Ahamkara, I would argue he would have done that.
I would have to imagine the power to do that would be unimaginable.
He had the power of a worm god backing him. And I know some of them had to have died on Mars.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what if you had the powerful worm god and the worm god's just in there going, not those Ahamkara. Like, I could see the Ahamkara being...
anything but that.
If the powerful worm god's like, no, then there's probably a reason. Like, everything else he resurrected, yeah, he had control over.
There's also the question of whether or not, for the necromancy magic to work, does the subject have to be willing to be resurrected? Like, the Hive, probably, it makes sense. But if he tried to resurrect, say, a Cabal warrior, would he be able to, because the Cabal might not be willing to be subjects of his will?
I actually figured the Hive were just because that's what he knew. My interpretation of that was those were his Hive that were frozen by Rasputin, who are all now dead, and he can bring them back. But I just figured he was limited to them because we only fought him like in that grave, in that space that became their grave. Like, we never... like, if he had gone to the other Loden point in Mars...
So here's my thing, and this goes back to that whole spinfoil about Rasputin and the Hive on Mars specifically, and how, you know, the Hive were, like, underneath the buildings that were there. Like, we know that the Hive have been in the system for a very, very long time. We know that the Hive have been in the moon since before human beings even were on the moon.
We know that something awful, arguably the Ahamkara or the worms, were there, and that the darkness was there.
We know the Hive were on the moon before us.
Well,
mm-hmm.
That goes back to some of our previous spin foil, which I'm glad that you're like asserting too, so I'm not gonna argue. I'm here for it. Lay it down for me, Mr. Wicked, because I'm here for the idea that the moon was war moon, that the moon was created around the dark ship. I'm here for all the previous theories we've mentioned on the wonderful spin foil theory podcast. Please,
I don't necessarily know if it was a war moon. But the Hive structures, and this is coming from who I consider an extremely reliable source. I don't know what you guys think. Toland has made multiple... there's dialogue that Toland has, and you can find this up on the Lore Network's collection that Blue put together of Toland's dialogue, that the Hive structures on the moon predate the earliest of human settlements on the moon, or if when the Hive were already up here when humanity first reached into the stars.
How didn't we notice them? It'd be one thing if they were all on the dark side of the moon.
They were all inside the moon.
Yeah. Well, imagine our primitive technology relative to their being well within the crust of the moon.
I guess what I'm maybe suggesting is, maybe the parts that exist now, in a way, did exist on the moon prior to man's interaction there. But I'm wondering if maybe they were part of a throne world rather than part of like our reality necessarily.
Perhaps.
But
the Vex aren't. I would say the Vex are probably not the only ones capable of mixing reality, but I think one of the interesting things about it, like, you know how you've got the different aspects of reality where you got space and then you have time, and the Hive and the Vex are pretty much, from the way I see it, embodiments of that. They manipulate space and time accordingly with their race. The Hive have their manipulation of space, where you've got the throne worlds, you've got the hidden realities within. And then the Vex manipulate time. So the Vex are the ones who are bouncing back and forth. So I think that there's definitely a possibility as far as being able to intermingle spaces, to where it wasn't necessarily that they existed here prior to as much as maybe they melded their reality into ours. So similar to how the Vex basically replaced pieces of planets with other time periods on the same planet. So
I dig that. I guess it's sort of like a yes and. I always viewed it as sort of a two different approaches, especially with most of the Vex that we encounter. Not all of the Vex that we encounter, but most of the Vex that we encounter have been of the, as I interpret them in the game, have been of the worship the darkness camp. And so it's really interesting you bring that, because I have always really interpreted what they've done in many ways as sort of different approaches to similar ideas. I think what they do is different. Like we've done an episode on Vex Throne Worlds. you can hear my thoughts about that there. But I feel like, much to again talk about what Blue and Green have talked about on Focus Fire Chat, is that the idea of the upside down. It's sort of like a Stranger Things reference. That's sort of like a mirror. Maybe a dark mirror.
Yeah.
To what is, whereas, I feel like almost what the Vex do is sort of create this redundant like eddy. In the river. To where everything's just swirling around in there.
In a pattern.
It's a space that they can control. It's a space that they like sort of separate out from time. And that's why like Atheon was such an effective conduit. He was in like his little eddy, where everything can come at him at once, because he's in like this stationary point in the flowing thing, in the flowing existence. Not to get too far down that rabbit hole. Although, Wicked, you're welcome back for when we do that rabbit hole.
I love rabbit holes. You have to keep me in the loop when that comes back around.
Oh yeah, yeah. Scribe. I don't know if that's been written down. And if you guys didn't hear me last week, also, like, I swear to God, I'm not picking on the Bagels. He's our scribe in our D&D group, and that's where it's referenced from.
He's bestest scribe.
Yeah.
My organization skill is 20.
Yeah, no, like, he's the bard, and we figured he was the one who was used to writing the most. And so he has to do it. Anyway, his vicious mockeries will tear you asunder.
Oh, dear God, no. They will always fail.
I don't know, man. Sometimes they have to take full hit points. Every now and again. I won't make him perform here, though, no. Like, he doesn't have a die in his hand. I think I'm at the point of the show where I gotta ask you some final scores. Bagel's final score. Mm-hmm.
I personally feel like the nightmare, the progenitor, or whatever you want to call it, whatever precedes the nightmare, the living being, does not necessarily have to be dead. Now, that said, we've got most of the entities that we encounter that are nightmares are dead, and I think that's more so to do with the fact that the concept of a being that we've already defeated or has otherwise been dispatched, and that being coming back as a nightmare, is much more psychologically traumatizing than just having any regular Joe Schmo that we maybe haven't defeated, or something like that, come and face us as a nightmare. Basically, our greatest foes we've already defeated, and the thought of those foes coming back out of the dark and facing us again is significantly more threatening than just just your regular Fallen Kell that you normally would face. So I'm going to give it, I feel like, I guess I don't know exactly how to score it because I'm not quite sure how we phrase the theory.
You just have to use numbers.
But
numbers, that's all you need.
I'm going to say that I do not believe that the progenitor has to be dead for a nightmare to be produced.
I think we'll phrase it as like, does maybe as we put the text in there, and this can be like, if you made it through to the end of the episode, you understand why we maybe announced it differently at the beginning. Maybe we can say does the person the ghost is based off of have to be dead?
Sure.
Plausibility
rating.
Yeah.
I'm gonna.
Well, hold on. What was Bagel's? I think I missed it.
So mine is So the.
You have to pick a number. I'm not. I am firm. I'm gonna be firm on that. We knew what this was when we started the show.
So do they have to be dead? -10. They don't have to be dead.
I understand your word. And it's really interesting you bring that up because, like, any way you slice it, whether you think the little, like, weird thing inside the heavy machine gun is Omar or not, the exotic heavy machine gun, I'm forgetting the name right now.
Xenophage?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Whether you think it's Omar or not, things that wield the darkness can make a facsimile of someone. Like, at very least, that thing thinks it's Omar based on the lore tab from it as I interpreted it.
Sure.
I agree.
So just to add to what you were saying, the bagels. Sorry, look, I mean to cut you off when I was berating the bagels for his score. What are your final thoughts and scores?
I am going to give it. I'm going to give it a -4 for plausibility that they have to, or actually, I'll give it a +6. I'll give it a +6 for it is plausible, but not so much to the point that I'm willing to rule out that they don't have to be dead. So I understand why it's a theory and why, you know, people might believe that that's the case, but I don't think there's enough to give it much higher of a score than that.
Alright, so I feel like we've settled on the idea that positive scores are like more like, yes, they have to be dead. And then negative scores are, no, they don't have to be dead? Is that where we're at?
Well, just the level. I think it's more like just the level. Like it's
levels of yes and no.
The more negative it gets, the less likely that they believe that they should be dead.
Yeah.
The higher it gets, the more plausible we're willing.
So I feel like, based on Fickroll, for me, this is my score time now. I feel like, for me, just the idea of, like, Fickroll, just the idea that there are random nightmares, I feel like even those ones that don't attack us, those, like, sort of, like, red ghosts of the Guardians, I feel like those are nightmares as well. They're just less concentrated, maybe less less visceral.
Okay.
I feel like the idea that that's because that's what Eris encounters are those red boys. And so I feel like with that combination, with the example of Fickroll, with the example of people we don't know that clearly aren't us, like Mithrax's nightmares being out there, I'm going to say that their trauma is what defined their choice to haunt you with that. Especially going back to Tanix, because, you know, Tanix...
He's not Sivified.
He's not Sivified, damn it. But he is altered. It's not like he went back to his original fallen form. He's still like a bunch of machinery and enhancements.
He is the form that we fear as guardians.
He's the one that took out Vandal Brad.
Yep. Exactly.
Yep. So I think it's entirely not necessary. So I'm going to give it a negative 13. It's not necessary at all that the manifestation be dead. Though that seems to be a theme.
Yeah.
All right.
Wicked, thank you so much for being our guest. This was a very fun trilogy of episodes after our initial, like, guys.
This sounds like a very bad disease.
Oh! Episodes?
Our episodes.
Episodes. Well, Wicked.
They're catching.
Yes, sir, has joined us for another episode. He might want you to get checked by a doctor.
That's how I want everyone. When you do those happy birthdays, can you just add a short W in front of the all caps H? Happy birthday!
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday! You don't have to do that every time.
Just every third time.
Just once, maybe four times. Maybe. Each time, four times. Wicked, thank you so much for being our guest, especially
thank
after that initial, incredibly long session that we did that was wonderful, but only one voice got recorded. That was the start of our audio troubles, and then to come back with us in these three arguably better episodes, y'all don't even know. You didn't get to listen to it. So you're going to have to trust me.
No one ever will.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to see me talking to myself, it's going to be a lot of awkward laughing.
we'll have to get going. So get another one going for an extra long lore episode or something.
I am totally down. I am happy to. You're so flexible. I think we're going to have you on whatever special episode we do again,
nice.
For sure. And of course, you're always welcome back on the show. You're staying on the pod Discord. Don't worry about that. So you'll be privy to our random musings and stuff. And you're always welcome to jump in, sir.
Absolutely.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Wicked, appreciate it, guys.
Wicked. Assuming that people listen to us first somehow, where can our fans find you?
So. I am on Twitter, Xbox, PlayStation, and computer on the same name, as well as on Reddit, YouTube, and I'm trying to think if there's anything else, and Discord, as Wicked Jester, WYKIDJESTR.
And I just want to add,
no number.
He used to be on Penguin Island, but that was before they shut it down.
God.
And he just won't go into New Penguin Island because he has self-respect, damn it.
Oh my God.
I will not stoop so low.
I'm broke.
Do you have any shout-outs, Wicked?
Just a shout-out to Black Lives Matter right now, especially, all the efforts that people have been putting into work. Making sure that the awareness is still going, that, the message is still getting out there, and that, we are out there trying to seek freedoms and proper equality for the people that live in this country. So major shout out to them. Major shout out to Bungie for the amazing launch of their new season. Did an amazing job on that. So but those are my two big shout outs for today.
Groovy. I'm super hyped for those shout outs. I'll be giving some cushions.
They're great.
As well.
Yeah.
Mr. The Bagels.
I want to give a shout out to Anubis and Panda Man for sticking with me for dungeon exploration for 3 hours the other night. That was a blast, and we died a lot, but you know what? We learned a lot, so
wait,
it was a good
nice.
Time.
So last episode, in the special episode, you gave a shout-out to two other people for that same shit, Are you telling me?
That was a shout out to Snuggle and Chris and Damien for just wandering through the story and whatnot. So.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, like, how many, like, are you cheating on these two groups?
I'll give everybody shout outs that plays with me because they're my buddies.
He's not sending you with a shout out.
Yeah, right?
Well, I want to give a shout out to all the Bagel shout outs because those are also my friends. And I love you guys too, though I won't name you again. though I will say I don't think any of you are fluffy. To go back to a group
thing
we were having earlier today at the time of this recording. I want to mirror Wicked's shout outs to BLM, especially BLM here in DC, if I'm being like extra specific. Just check out their Twitter, check out their materials, check out their message about what is going on here in the city. Like, I know we've gotten a lot of press recently, and they're going to say everything about what people's reality is way better and more eloquently than I'll ever be able to. So I'm just going to invite you to go look at what they have to say. Because they have my support.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I want to give a shout out to also copying everyone to Bungie. Like I'm really digging this new season. I'm really glad that you guys found a way to convince everyone that Gambit is fun. And I don't mean that as a joke. I fucking love Gambit. Like people that know me, like I'll play it for fun.
The love of God, don't put any bounties out there. Like complete 8 million cycles.
Oh God, I think they learned their lesson on that one.
I feel like that first time made it known that they heard us on that one.
Well, like, it was like the first couple times it was crushed really easily, and I thought they were like, guys, we can't have them do this in an afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was people were really put off by the new numbers, and they were like, "Nah, fuck you. Let's see what happens if we don't do it." And they're like,
Yeah, they called our boss.
Yeah, we called this wrong. We called this wrong. But
it's okay. It's a new game, and it's a learning experience for everybody. So
yeah. I love what you guys are doing. If you guys ever listen to this, I love what the writers are doing with the web lore, with all the little expanses, little nods. Like, I thought Bahanan wasn't going to be in this season, but then go look at the seasonal ship. Go look at the seasonal ship in the Eververse. I'm not saying you got to buy it, but I'm saying go look at it. And there he is. Like, I thought he wasn't going to be there. There he was.
Not enough squid stuff.
Right? Just having a great time with words. So that's the I think in this way I'm complimenting both sides. I think your creativity is amazing, and I think that the way you're developing and deploying the game is also very very worth praise. So like bless you guys. Thank you for entertaining us in these quarantine times and times of unrest. So much appreciated.
Indeed.
Yeah, I think that's all I got this week. Unless you guys have like emergency comments and or like well wishes or shout outs.
I'm good.
I think I'm good. Just big shout out to Lore Network, all of our friends there.
Oh yeah, we just got a new member too. Yeah, check out the Greater Lore Network at thelorenetwork.com. And just if you enjoy us, you're gonna love those guys. That's how I'll put it. They all do a wonderful job and are definitely worth your time and attention. So please go check them out. Alright, I think that's all I got, guys. With that, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.